NBA on NBC.
What is up, everybody? This is Jim Mylock, and you're listening to Pot of Fame, the podcast where we break down the careers of former athletes and decide whether or not they should get a call to the Hall. On today's podcast, we're talking about former St. Louis Rams wide receiver Torrey Holt and whether or not he belongs in the Football Hall of Fame. And joining us in just a moment to discuss Holt's career and Hall of Fame candidacy is sports writer at The Messenger and friend of the pod, Neil Payne. Before bringing Neil on, let's talk a little more about Torrey Holt. So Torrey Holt had an 11-year career in the NFL. Started his career in 1999. That was the year the Rams won the Super Bowl. And then ended in 2009. He played every year with the Rams, except he played 1 year in Jacksonville. I kind of remember, but we think of him as a Ram. He was a 7-time Pro Bowler, a 1-time AP All-Pro first-teamer, and a 1-time AP All-Pro second-teamer. He led the NFL in receiving yards twice, once in 2000 with 1,635 yards, and then again in 2003 with 1,696 yards. And he also led the NFL in catches that year in 2003 with 117. For his NFL career, 920 catches, it's good for 23rd all time, 13,382 receiving yards, it's good for 17th all time, and 74 receiving touchdowns, which is good for 42nd all time. He was also named to the Hall of Fame All-Decade second team for the 2000s. First team was made up of Marvin Harrison and Randy Moss, who are both in the Hall of Fame. And the second team was made up of Torrey Holt and Terrell Owens, T.O. himself, who, of course, T.O. is in the Hall of Fame. So we're going to talk about Holt's career and, of course, his Hall of Fame candidacy today. Before I bring Neon, just a real quick thing at the top here. I said this last week. I said this on last week's Hall of Fame Market Watch episode as well. I'm going on a trip. I will be out of the country for the next month or so. I will be out in Australia and New Zealand. So I wanted to say that because, one, if you follow me on Twitter, I'll probably be a little less active than usual. But two, I also wanted to let you know because you're going to hear a lot of introductions coming up in the next month or so for my pod where, you know, I'm probably talking about the new year, the holidays, because I was recording a bunch of podcasts ahead of time, because even though I'm going to be out of the country, you'll still have a new podcast every Monday. We're going to be coming. I've taped about 6 episodes for while I'm out. So I will have a pod dropping every Monday. So you will not, even though I'm gone, you will not miss this podcast when I'm gone. We have never missed a Monday in the last 3.5 years, and we weren't about to start just because of this trip I'm taking. So a couple things. One, I'll be a little less active on Twitter, but I'll still be there. Two, you will have an episode drop every Monday. Three, I will not be doing Hall of Fame Market Watch episodes on Fridays while I'm away. I didn't want to lug my stuff across, you know, across the world to record the pod, but also, you know, I'm not going to be able to keep up with what's going on in, you know, the NBA, the NFL while I'm out. I'm not. I'm going to try my best, but when you're 17-hour time difference in Australia, 19-hour time difference in New Zealand, it's going to get tough. So, again, pod will come every Monday. It'll just be, again, stuff I've recorded over the last month or so. Maybe not as timely as usual, but you will still have an episode every Monday. So I just want to get that out of the way. I said that last week. I'm saying again now, and I'll probably leave it alone. If you haven't listened to the last two, you might not listen to the following week either. So this will be my last reminder, but thanks for bearing with me if you heard this last week. So with that message out of the way and with the quick facts about Torrey Holt out of the way, let's bring on Neil. All right, so I'd like to welcome back to the podcast sports writer at The Messenger and longtime friend of the pod, Neil Payne. Neil, welcome back. Happy New Year. How you doing?
Hey, Jim. How's it going, man?
It is going good. So it's Friday. We're recording this on January 5th. And we're talking football today. So Neil has joined many times over the years. We've covered plenty of basketball players, a few baseball, even our first and only still to this day hockey episode.
But we've somehow never tackled football, which is one of the three main sports I cover on this podcast, which was surprising. So almost, I think it's coming up on 3 years, maybe, Neil, since the first time you've come on this pod, which is nuts. We are doing our very first football episode.
Shocking.
And the topic today is someone I grew up watching and am very familiar with this game, and I'm sure Neil is too, and that is former St. Louis Rams wide receiver Torrey Holt, who had a 11-year NFL career, played from 1999 to 2009, so actually relatively short career, but an impactful career. And as of today, he is a finalist for the 2024 Football Hall of Fame class. That Hall of Fame class will be announced right before the Super Bowl. So by the time this pod airs, that will just be a few weeks out. And he's been, you know, floating in that semi-finalist range. He's been talked about as a Hall of Famer for many years here, but has still not been able to get over the hump. And as we always do on this show, we are going to talk about Torrey Holt's career and his Hall of Fame candidacy. And Neil, to kick it off, our first football episode, same question I ask every time you're on, but just about a different player today. When Torrey Holt comes up in conversation, he comes to mind, you see a Torrey Holt jersey out there, a very cool
which happens
retro.
Often.
It does happen often. I've seen some Torrey Holt jerseys out there, but if you do, what's the first thing that's coming to your mind?
Yeah, I think about The Greatest Show on Turf, which he was not necessarily one of the headliners of in that first season, or, you know, the very top headliners, I think, were, it's fair to say, were Kurt Warner, Marshall Faulk, and Isaac Bruce. And so you think about like his role in that and how he ended up being the mainstay of that era as they shifted forward, because that Rams team was really interesting. And one note on Holt, just to kind of kick things off, was I loved the fact that, yeah, he was not one of the big three. I guess we call them triplets, you know, traditionally with, you know, football teams where they've got like a great quarterback, a great running back, and a great receiver. But he was like a 1B to Isaac Bruce's 1A pretty much immediately. And you especially saw that as that season went on, which is crazy because he was a rookie. Now, you know, he was 23 that year. He was the number 6 overall pick in the draft, had a great career at NC State. So he was pretty NFL ready when he came in. But just for a guy in his first season in the NFL to be thrust into a situation where there's like so much talent around him, not really expectations at the beginning of that season, because I don't think anyone knew how good the Rams were going to be. But as the season went on, to sort of see him be able to mesh and play off of those other guys who are all Hall of Famers or will be, and just the maturation process of him. And then as things went on, you know, they have this amazing season in 99. They win the Super Bowl. Then in 2000, they had their issues defensively, of course, but also there was a big kind of shakeup at quarterback because Warner was hurt. Trent Green, who originally was supposed to be the quarterback of the 99 team, comes in for a part of the season in 2000. And, you know, Holt clicks with him as well. Then 2001, they go back to the Super Bowl with Kurt Warner. And by this time, Holt is one of the best receivers in the league. And he's kind of ascended beyond just, I think even by 2000, he had done that. He led the league in receiving yards that year. And that offense, the 2000 offense, was actually probably the best one of all those Greatest Show on Turf offenses. But they didn't really do anything in the playoffs. And so then, you know, 02 was a rough year for them, and Kurt Warner was hurt for a lot of it. He actually got ousted as the starting quarterback, and just a kind of a messy year. But then for Torrey Holt to kind of come back in 2003 with brand new quarterback and Mark Bulger, leads the league in receptions, leads the league in receiving yards and yards per game, and is a first team all pro that year. And it kicks off this, you know, it's just part of the stretch of seasons where, when I was researching this, his first three seasons, if you look at approximate value, which I kind of like as a metric, we talk about it a lot with the Hall of Fame stuff, because it goes through history and kind of puts things in context. Receivers are tough to deal with typically because the benchmarks have changed, which I'm sure we'll talk about over time. approximate value kind of adjusts for that because it just is tethered to how good your offense was relative to the league. Well, his first three seasons are second only to Randy Moss in terms of total value. And his first eight seasons, which is cherry picking a little bit because he did fall off a little bit after that season number eight, but it's tied with Lance Allworth for fourth all time behind only Jerry Rice, Randy Moss, and Marvin Harrison. So this is kind of what I'm talking about with him is he was part of the greatest show on turf. And then by the end, you know, that end of that 8 year period where he could kind of look around and almost be like, where is everybody? Like Kurt Warner's gone. Mark Bulger is the starter. Marshall Faulk is gone. And Steven Jackson, who totally gets forgotten, but was a really, truly dominant for all you fantasy players out there, remember him probably especially. But he was a dominant running back in his time and kind of Marshall Faulk-esque in terms of being a dual threat runner and receiver. And there was Torrey Holt. He was still there. And some of that is the product of like he was just younger than the guys at the beginning of the Greatest Show on Turf era. So as his career went on, those guys kind of faded or they just moved on, went to another another team in the case of Kurt Warner. But you know, Torrey Holt was the glue that held together the spirit of the Greatest Show on Turf well after the other kind of more principal actors that we think of, even like Mike Martz was fired, you know, before Torrey Holt's the end of his career in St. Louis. But he was still out there putting up, you know, he had 1,000 yards in 2007 with like a completely and made a Pro Bowl with a completely different cast of characters. So oftentimes when we think about receivers, it is like, you know, they enhance the other players around them. And I think this is like a really good example of that because, you know, Mark Bulger, even Kurt Warner, honestly, I mean, he started out, he was famously had been bagging groceries and was undrafted. And then, you know, Mark Bulger, not exactly, you know, a super well-regarded NFL prospect quarterback coming in. It just made those guys' life so much easier to throw to a guy like Torrey Holt, who had, you know, the ability to be a possession receiver at different times in his career. Like there, he had some seasons where he caught the completion percentage throwing to him was 70%. He also had other seasons where his yards per reception was super high and he was more of a big play threat. He had double digit touchdowns in multiple seasons. So he was a guy that could really do a lot of different things to make the offense, you know, run smoother. And yeah, he had a lot of other great players around him, but I think he was a guy that could make other players better as well, which was a perfect fit for that team. And so that's why, you know, I just loved watching that, especially the first iteration of the Greatest Show on Turf, because it just was out of nowhere. And personally, I have a memory of going to, because I grew up in Atlanta, I went to one of the 99 Rams versus Falcons games in which the Rams just murdered the Falcons and Torrey Holt had about, I want to say he had like an 70 yard touchdown where Warner just like threw it to the back of the end zone and Holt made this incredible kind of catch to maintain control in the back of the end zone. And I remember just even then thinking like, whoa, this guy is really, really good. Like this receiver that is just a rookie, but he's making these big plays in this really explosive offense. So that's all kind of my stream of consciousness when it comes to Torrey Holt.
Yeah, and honestly, Neil, I don't have too many notes on that because it's the greatest show on turf for me as well. And growing up as a kid, just getting to the NFL around that time, how potent that offense was and how the exact opposite of the Chicago Bears offense I was watching at the time, it was like night and day. Or every season since. Hey, Justin Fields is coming along here. But in all seriousness, you know, Warner, Bruce, Faulk, all in the Hall of Fame already. We're talking about Holt being possibly a fourth member of that offense. It's one of the greatest offenses that we've ever seen. And again, if you look at the numbers and you compare them to today's offenses, maybe you wouldn't be as, you know, enthralled by it. But if you compare about what the rest of the league was doing and how many weapons they had, it truly was, especially with Marshall Faulk just being a freak of nature in the backfield. It was one of the more fun offenses. I will say, though, Neil, the time span of that offense being what they were, much shorter than I realized, as you kind of pointed out. People started leaving pretty quickly, and then it was just kind of Holt there. But even by his second season, I think you mentioned he led the league in receiving in 2000 at just 24 years old. What stood out to me when I looked at it, 19.9 yards per catch. He was almost going 20 yards per catch, which, again, that was an outlier for his career. For his career, he was a 14.5 guy. He wasn't DeSean Jackson his whole career, but that really stood out of just how big of a playmaker he was. And you know, when I think of him and I think of like the NFL today and all the great receivers we have, I think a lot of Bengals receiver Ja'Marr Chase, when I think of Holt as a receiver, to me, they're very similar.
I like that comparison.
So I know in Twins, we don't do today's wide receivers, but whenever I watch Chase, I think of Holt because I can see Chase be a very good, possession receiver. But then there's also times where Chase will just do a simple post or something, get the ball, and then go like 60 yards for a touchdown. And that was what Holt was capable of. You know, Holt wasn't like, he wasn't Calvin Johnson, right? He wasn't 6'5". He wasn't this like freak of nature wide receivers that we got used to. And it's kind of Chase is 6 foot. Holt was 6 foot. They're not these hulking guys. They're not these Randy Moss type freak athletes, but they could catch the ball anywhere. And then when they get the ball, they make plays. They're playmakers. It sounds cliche, but that's kind of what I think of Holt. The one thing maybe against the whole playmaker thing, and this is kind of a cheap, I think, shot at Holt, but you know, he did have 3 seasons where he had double digit touchdowns, but if you look at his career, 74 touchdown catches, that's 42nd all time. And you know, he's pretty good on receiving yards, catches. He's, you know, in the top 25 in both of those categories, top 20 for receiving yards, but TD catches, he's 42nd. And if you look at some of these other receivers that have gotten the Hall of Fame recently, even someone like Calvin Johnson, who had a really short career, I think Calvin Johnson had like 85 touchdown catches or something, even with a shorter career than Holt. That's the one thing. He didn't find the end zone as much. Some of that is never a receiver's fault. But when I say playmaker, I usually think of touchdowns. And again, 3 seasons with double digit, but he never led the league. 74 is a good number, but not a number you see on some of these other Hall of Fame wide receivers, especially when you get into the Terrell Owens, Randy Mosses, Marvin Harrisons of the world that he'll have over, you know, 130, 140 touchdown catches. But again, that's nitpicking, but just something I wanted to point out. Absolute playmaker, but didn't always find the end zone.
Yeah, I agree with that. And I don't want to spoil a future comparison point.
Oh,
but
maybe
there
you
is...
save it.
Yeah, I was going to say, there's another receiver who's sort of like that, who I bet you probably are thinking of.
In today's game or in the past?
Very recently. He does still play.
Is there a better place to bring it up, or you want to just bring it up now?
Well, I think we can say his career is certainly winding down. I think it's fair to say, even though he's still active. But I think of Julio Jones as someone.
Oh,
you know,
yes.
He's bigger,
very much so.
Yeah, he's bigger than Torrey Holt, but famously, and I actually think Torrey Holt was better at he has more touchdowns than Julio Jones. But Julio Jones was the poster child for great receiving stats except for touchdowns, and could just go like crazy amounts of games even in a high powered offense like that Falcons offense in 2016. He only had 6 receiving touchdowns that year, which is just mind boggling. But yeah, he would infamously have all the pieces of the puzzle except for touchdowns. Now I think he's actually kind of worse in that regard than Torrey Holt, but they have very similar numbers that we can kind of get into it at another point too, because I think Julio Jones, maybe you correct me on this, and again, he is not a retired player yet, but I think he's going to be in the Hall of Fame. I think it's fair to say, right? Whereas if you can compare Torrey Holt to him, then that's a feather in Julio Jones's cap, I think.
Yeah, no, Julio. So again, Julio's 34 right now. He's playing for the Eagles. I think he had like 2 touchdown catches in one game a couple weeks ago or last week. His numbers, I brought him up. He right now at this moment today, he'll play one more game. So these might be a little off, but 912 catches. So he's 8 behind Holt. Yards, he's got about 300 more receiving yards. And touchdowns, actually 8 less than Holt. Yeah. Because as you pointed out, Neil, he only has 1 double-digit touchdown catch season. That was his second year in Atlanta. Other than that, he's never got past eight, and he actually hasn't had eight since 2018. And I think I saw numbers. I'm going to pull this out of nowhere, and I could be wrong, so listeners, don't attack me too much if I'm wrong, but I feel like I saw a stat once he got, like, stopped within the five-yard line on a catch, like, seven times one year or something. Like, he's always just about to score and then goes down at, like, the one-yard line.
There's value, you know, like, there's value to getting those last few yards, but it's also about the guy that gets you down there and puts you in that position, too. And, you know, I think they have similar numbers in terms of, like, same number of Pro Bowl appearances. Julio was an All-Pro twice. Torrey Holt was only the one time, like we mentioned. But otherwise, you know, Torrey Holt has one championship. Julio Jones hasn't won one unless the Eagles do something, which is looking more remote by the week, it seems. So, you know, with all that in context, I still think that, like, there will be a debate to be had about Julio, but Julio was the best receiver in football at his peak. I think, you know, around 2016, the best all around receiver, a guy that could do a bunch of different things. And I think that's pretty similar to Torrey Holt. Maybe not all at the same time, but you mentioned, like, he had a season where he was a crazy big play guy and averaged 20 yards per catch. He also had this season where he was more of a possession guy, and he was able to slot into different roles. And that goes back to what we were talking about before, where it's like just making things easier for people within that offense is like he was a Swiss Army knife for them. And they had a lot of guys like that. I mean, Marshall Faulk, of course, is the best, I think, the best receiving running back ever. And so being able to kind of play with those guys is what made them so dangerous. But like Holt made Marshall Faulk's life easier too by stretching the field and giving him more space to work with. So it all kind of played off of each other. And that's what I love about football is that you have all these different moving parts that, if you take out one of them, it's not like baseball where you can say like, oh, this guy contributed this many runs and you can kind of be confident of what would happen if you swapped him with someone else. In football, it's a lot harder to kind of isolate those performances. And yet still here we are talking about yards and touchdowns and all those things because it's fun.
All right, Neil, let's move to our next segment here. We call this That Memorable Moment. And what we try to do is look through history, and it can be anything you want. You know, it could be a single catch you saw, a play made. It can be a game, a playoff game, an entire season. It can be whatever you want. For Torrey Holt, what would you say his most memorable moment of his career was?
Well, for me, okay, so by the way, I actually found it was not 99, the game that I went to where he torched the Falcons. It was in 2000, week four of the 2000 season, in which Torrey Holt had an 80-yard touchdown catch in the second quarter, and then an 85-yard touchdown catch in the fourth quarter. So that left quite the impression.
If that was your first impression seeing him, then that's the ultimate first. Yeah. Okay, in person. That's the ultimate first impression seeing him live.
Yeah, seeing him live do that, I think, really is like the reason why we're talking about him today. But no, I mean, I think for most people, it would have been Super Bowl 34 because we all remember the basically it was the touchdown that ended up winning them the game because they ended up barely being able to hold on at the end against the Titans and keep them out of the end zone. Speaking of guys getting stopped short of the end zone, that's probably the most famous case of that of all time. Earlier in that game, he scored a touchdown that gave them, I think it was a 16-0 lead, which then Tennessee sort of chipped away at and put them in a position where they then had to take that shot to Isaac Bruce later in the game. But and Isaac Bruce had more receiving yards in Super Bowl 34, but it kind of maybe it was the story of that season for him that it flew under the radar that Torrey Holt had seven catches, 109 yards, and a touchdown in that game as well, even though Bruce had six catches, 162 yards, and that really long 73-yard touchdown or whatever it was. So, you know, it was a case of him being the number two behind Isaac Bruce, but also contributing very important points, what turned out to be in that Super Bowl, and without him, they don't win. And so for me, that was kind of the memory of it. And the way he made the touchdown catch, I kind of went back and looked at it, and It was a helmet catch. He caught it, you know, streaking over the middle. I think there was a linebacker on him, and he pinned the ball up against his face mask and kind of reeled it in to make that catch as Kurt Warner was about to get just completely obliterated before he let go of the ball. And so, you know, that spoke to him as it's kind of a perfect encapsulation of his role, where it's like possession guy underneath for that offense that year, with Isaac Bruce providing the big play home run hitter. And then they switched roles in future years, and he was more of the home run hitter. So again, it all comes back to the versatility of him being a different type of receiver, which I gotta say, for a guy like Randy Moss, who I absolutely adore, think is probably the best receiver ever, just in terms of pure impact that he had on the game, he was mostly big play. He was not asked to do a lot of the possession mm-hmm. over the middle type of stuff. And a guy like T.O. did more of both. Jerry Rice certainly did more of both. But, you know, Torrey Holt's in that same type of player where it's like he could do things that you asked him to do and didn't really seem to have like an issue with. I mean, I guess, you know, if I had Randy Moss on my team, I'd tell him to run a deep route every single time as well, because he was probably going to beat some guy and torch him downfield.
Yeah, and just a quick shout to Randy Moss. You're right. He wasn't asked to do that other stuff, and Holt actually only has 72 less catches than Randy Moss. But Randy Moss has over double the amount of touchdown catches that Torrey Holt does. And that just shows how dominant Randy Moss was. That guy was, he just found the end zone at all times. 156 touchdowns for Randy Moss.
That's crazy.
In his career on 982 catches, that is a hell of a ratio in catch to touchdowns. But again, he has that like that famous one line where it's like three catches, 156 yards, and like three touchdowns or whatever.
Yeah, that was the Dallas. What was it? Dallas Cowboys game on Thanksgiving or whatever
exactly.
In 98.
Yeah, I know I'm butchering that a little bit, but that's kind of what I don't know. It was four catches or three catches?
No, I think it was three, and they were all touchdowns or something.
Ridiculous, man. But this is not a Randy Moss pod. We know where he is. He's firmly in Ken. And Neil, this is crazy. I had the same thing down for me. I had the Super Bowl performance too. So we went chalk on the first one, Gray Show on Turf. We both had the same answer. This one, we both had the same answer. If we had the same answer our next segment, I'm going to think you took my notes or something because you didn't have time to make your own notes. So let's go to our next segment, and twins. And what we try to do here is there's never an identical twin, but we look at Ken today. We look at who has a bust in Ken today. And we go, okay, who is the closest twin to the topic at hand? So whether it be their numbers, whether it be the way they play the game, or maybe a mix of both, Neil, who would you say is closest to being Torrey Holt's twin in the Hall of Fame?
Yeah, so if you look at, and I think this is a tremendously useful tool that's a little bit buried at profootballreference.com, but they have a tool that finds players that are at the same position that had a similar arc to their career. So it doesn't necessarily mean that they played the same way, but in terms of the value that they put up at similar ages and sort of the progression of their career mapped onto each other by, like, you know, the number, hey, he had this many good seasons and his career tailed off at this point. It really interesting comparison as their most comparable Hall of Famer for his career, which is Paul Warfield, who is a guy that I don't think we really remember that much. He played for Cleveland. He played for Miami. He was on the fabled 72 Dolphins as a receiver. But, you know, it's a little different to compare numbers for players in like receivers before, I think it was 1977, where they put in the rules that kind of opened up the passing game. Like, you couldn't just completely murder a guy downfield, you know, past 5 yards before the ball was thrown, like you could before that. But again, something like approximate value actually does try to compensate for that by just saying like, okay, you had a great offense for the time and you were a great receiver for the time. And so we're kind of putting that on the same scale as a guy who was a great receiver in the 2000s or the 90s or whenever. And so Paul Warfield shows up, which I think is really interesting because he's in the Hall of Fame. He had more Pro Bowl nods, but not that many more. He was a two-time All-Pro instead of a one-time, but one-time Super Bowl champ, or I guess NFL champ. We're counting no, it's actually 72 Dolphins. That would be
he made
team.
Him with the Dolphins, yeah. In
two-time
in
Super
72
Bowl
and
winner,
73. Yep.
Right, two-time Super Bowl winner, and then one-time with the Browns. Browns as champions, maybe that could happen this year, but not any other time before the Super Bowl started, since before the Super Bowl started, but Warfield was on those teams too. So yeah, a little bit more success as a team, but not that much more. So I think they map onto each other really interesting. And he was on the Hall of Fame all 1970s team as one of the receivers on that team as well, which really speaks to his performance and ability as a receiver. And Torrey Holt was on the Hall of Fame's all 2000s team as a receiver. So it's an interesting comparison and a guy that we don't usually think of or talk about that much.
Yeah, no, Paul Warfield, that's an interesting one, Neil, because I totally get everything you just said. It's totally valid. The one thing about Warfield, though, that I've come to understood over the years as I've talked to Hall of Fame voters, people that saw him play, and if you look at the numbers too, it shows it that he was a burner, and mm-hmm. and again, Holt, we just talked about, he could turn it on when he needed to, but Warfield's career average was 20.1 yards per catch, which is just absurd. Now, we just talked about it. It was a different game back then. Quarterbacks chucked it around more, balls were deeper, more interceptions were thrown because of that, which changes, like, you don't make as many catches, but every catch you make is going deep. But again, chewing errors like that is tough, but I totally like that. And again, looking at his numbers, right, catches didn't even have half of what Holt had. 85 touchdowns, though, which is very good. And the reason I know a bit about Paul Warfield and I talk about him more, it's interesting, Neil, when I put up stuff like, anyone that follows my Twitter knows I'm obsessed with Rushmore, and I do that all day, and I'll throw up a wide receiver Rushmore sometimes, and I'll put like three names in there. I'll put like Randy Moss, Jerry Rice, one more guy, and I'll be like, who's my fourth? And I wouldn't put Paul Warfield as an option. I just didn't think he deserved it. And I would have a lot of people coming out of the woodwork throwing his name out in the ring.
That's fascinating.
And enough people did it where I had to start looking into it more, asking around people that saw him more. And a lot of people back it. Like, they feel very strongly about it. And again, this is where sometimes numbers don't tell the whole story. Like, you would look at his reference, and again, if you're not thinking about the air, you'd be like, this guy had 1,000-yard receiving season. What are we talking about here? But if you look at how he compares against his contemporaries, if you look at, you know, what big of a weapon he was, and scoring 85 touchdowns as a receiver in the 60s and 70s, how hard that was to do, I can get where they're coming from. And I've started to include him more and more in options because they have a backing. And again, if we're talking about profile of the player, Warfield, 6 foot, 188 pounds,
yeah,
which is almost identical to Holt's kind of composition. So I really like that one. We did not go chalk on this one.
Thank goodness.
I went with someone a little more recent who actually, believe it or not, career overlap with Holt by just a season. And that's Andre Reed.
Oh,
who played for the Buffalo Bills for most of his career, finished out with Washington in 2000. So actually him and Holt overlapped 2 years. But Reed's a guy who, he made a bunch of Pro Bowls, seven, just like Holt. Never made an All-Pro first team, but 2 second teams. So if you're counting first and second teams, him and Holt both made two. And if you're looking at their numbers, like their catches, Reed's 31 catches above him. Yards, they're within 200 of each other. Touchdowns, Reed's got him beat by 13. But Reed did play longer. He played for more years. And he played in 4 Super Bowls with Buffalo, never won one, but was constantly in the playoffs and was a top receiver for Jim Kelly. And think about that offense, right?
Right. That, to me, that was sort of the
Thurman Thomas. It was like the precursor.
Show. Yeah.
It was like the greatest show on grass. I think the Bills played on grass. So you had Kelly, you had Thurman Thomas, that, you know, dynamic running back. You had Andre Reed. So similar type of offense there. That
greatest show on snow.
Greatest show on snow. I like it. the one caveat I would want to say for Reed, right? If we're just comparing stats, Reed did play in an era where it was a little tougher to garner, you know, yards and catches and touchdowns. So even though their stats are very comparable, I look at Reed's and I think it's a little more impressive just because, you know, outside of Jerry Rice, you know, people weren't putting up the video game numbers that we started to see near the end of Holt's career. And even early Holt, it was still a little tougher. Nowadays, you know, everyone's getting 1700 yards receiving. But
well, they have longer seasons They've completely distorted the standards.
So again, and we're talking about this probably a little more in court, but to put it frankly, I hold Andre Reed's numbers in a little different light than I hold Holt's, not completely, but a little different light, but still very comparable careers across the board. Holt had the edge on, like, actually won a championship, and Holt actually did lead the league in receiving yards twice. Reed never did, and I think playing in the same era as Jerry Rice kind of hurts you there, but that's a whole different thing. But that was my comp, Neil. So we did not go 3-for-3 there, which is good. We can't be that similar. That's just boring.
I thought you were going to go Tim Brown, actually. So
no, that's a good one, too, though.
Because I think they're very similar physically. You know, I think Tim Brown had better numbers, though.
Tim Brown played, you know, forever. But yeah, Tim Brown's numbers across the board. Also 100 touchdown guy, yeah. 9 Pro Bowl guy. A little better, but no, Tim Brown's good too in terms of stature. 6'1", 195, almost the same. Reed was a little bigger guy, especially when he played. He was 6'2". He was a bigger dude. So honestly, by body type, Tim Brown. See, before today's era where everyone has to be 6'3", 4", 5", all the receivers used to be like 6 foot.
Now six foot is short.
It's so short. But again, corners used to be like 5'9", and now corners are like 6'3". So it's all relative. It's all relative. All right, Neil, let's go to our final segment. Let's go to court.
You want answers?
I think I'm entitled.
You want answers?
I want the truth.
You can't handle the truth.
And there's a kind of a few different things I want to cover here. But the first thing I want to cover is around, I guess, the contemporaries of when Holt played. Because here's the thing. If we just look at Holt's raw numbers, right, 920 catches, it's 23rd all-time, receiving yards, 13,382, 17th all-time. Again, touchdown 74, that's 42nd all-time. But again, those numbers are eye-popping, right? 13,000 receiving yards, 920 catches. And again, this is all in 11 seasons. It's not like he played forever to get these. It was pretty short career. He was just consistent. And he had, I think, 6 consecutive seasons of over 1,300 receiving yards. It's very consistent. That's very good. However, as Holt came into the league and as the 2000s got into later in his career, the league started passing more and more and more. And the numbers started going up and up and up. And that really started to happen, you know, right after the greatest show on turf, honestly, probably kicked it off. And then
I was going
to
say, it's the greatest show on turf's fault in many ways that
kind of started this, right?
And there's a little bit of a symmetry there where I think the other team most responsible for all of that is the 2007 Patriots, and 2007 was really Torrey Holt's last good elite, whatever you want to call it, year, his last year making a Pro Bowl. So I do think that was something that I wanted to talk about as well, is that he straddled these two kind of eras that kind of came together. He played a role in creating that transition between eras, but it also makes it kind of difficult to compare his numbers to others. And then, of course, I think the elephant in the room, because like you, I like to look at the contemporaries. To me, it's important to with receivers to compare their stats pretty much only to guys that whose careers, you know, overlapped, started within a few years, ended within a few years, so you can kind of get that. But when you look at that with Torrey Holt, it's a very difficult comparison against T.O., Isaac Bruce, Randy Moss, and Marvin Harrison, all of whom have more yards than him by not a small amount. And then it kind of falls off, or like Torrey Holt is between that top four, which I think we all can agree are like four of the best receivers ever, and contains one of those guys is maybe the best receiver ever. I don't know if you're a Moss guy, a T.O. guy, maybe even some Marvin Harrison, maybe Isaac. I don't think Isaac Bruce is quite in that conversation, but you know, it's like a pretty big deal, that group. Then there's Torrey Holt. This is among guys that started or played from 95 to 2010. And then you get like the Jimmy Smith and the Derek Mason and the Hines Ward and the Musa Muhammad and Rod Smith. Rod Smith is actually kind of an interesting comparison too. He's an underrated receiver, but it is like Torrey Holt is, do you bump him up into that top four group or do you hold him down into the other group? And I happen to think Jimmy Smith is also really, really underrated. I think you and I pitched doing a pot of fame on him at some point as well. I think Torrey Holt is pretty obviously better than Jimmy Smith, but I think it makes it difficult to contextualize Torrey Holt when his contemporaries were just, you know, these all-time GOAT type guys. You know, Jerry Rice isn't in that group technically in terms of putting up the most yards in that 95 to 2010 window, but he did overlap with Torrey Holt's career as well at the tail end. So you're getting like, it's a very tough group of guys to compare against when you're talking about Torrey Holt's contemporaries or people whose careers, you know, the bulk of their careers overlapped with the bulk of his as well.
Yeah. So Neil, you're definitely reading my notes, because what I was about to do with you and we're going to do right now. No, you're good. You're good. You're just, you're segueing me in so much, so I don't have to talk so much. So I have a list here. And I'm probably even missing a couple names, but I had to stop it at 15 because it was getting out of control. I have 15 wide receivers down here, names that intersected with Holt's career with five seasons or more. So if they each at least played in five of the same seasons, they got on my list. I'm going to run through them with you. And I'm just going to, I have a new format for this. I started this a couple, I think this might be your first time on with the new format. I like it better though, because my old way was way worse. But I'm going to run through these names, and if I name a person and you think Holt just was better, you say Holt. If you think the player I'm naming is better, you say that name. So, for instance, the first name I would say would be Randy Moss, and I would figure you would say Moss. And
Moss. Then if it, you,
okay. So, here we go. So, Randy Moss.
Moss.
T.O.
T.O.
Larry Fitzgerald.
That is tough, but I think Larry.
Marvin Harrison.
Marvin.
Hines Ward.
Holt.
Anquan Boldin.
Holt? Probably.
Okay. This is gut instinct. You don't have to have no
strength. I'm going gut.
Steve Smith Jr.
Ooh, wow, that is actually a really tough one. I always thought Steve Smith was very underrated. I'm still probably going to go. Oh, man, that is really tough. I'm going to go Steve Smith. I got to go Steve Smith, man.
Okay. Marquise Colston.
I mean, Torrey Holt, right? Like, I don't know.
Chad Johnson or Chad Ochocinco.
Torrey Holt. I think he had more longevity.
Derek Mason.
Torrey Holt.
Isaac Bruce?
Probably Isaac Bruce. Okay.
Joe Horn.
I'm going to go with Torrey Holt on this one. Although I don't know, you know, Torrey Holt never pulled a cell phone out from under the stanchion of the the uprights after a touchdown.
Musin Muhammad?
Torrey Holt.
And then your guy, Jimmy Smith.
Yeah, I got to go with Torrey Holt over Jimmy Smith, but it's sentimentally, I am a big fan of Jimmy Smith's.
Okay, so in that lineup I just went, you had Moss over him, T over him, Fitz over him, Harrison over him, Steve Smith Jr. over him. So that's
senior.
Junior.
I don't know about Junior. Junior's probably hasn't hit the scene yet.
Senior. So that's five. So he would be sixth in this line of people. However, I left two people out specifically because they're also on the ballot with him. And that's Reggie Wayne and Andre Johnson. So right now, for my listeners, the ballot's down to 15. It's the finalists. Torrey Holt's one of the finalists, but so is Reggie Wayne and Andre Johnson, three wide receivers are finalists this year. So, Neil, same question. If I were to throw Andre Johnson and Reggie Wayne to you, Torrey Holt or Andre Johnson or Reggie Wayne, what are you doing there?
I would sandwich Holt in between them with Wayne on top and Johnson below.
Okay. All right. So for a final count, we have T.O., Moss, Fitz, Harrison, Wayne, Steve Smith. So Holt would be the seventh best of this group that, again, he's kind of like sandwiched between two different generations here, but he plays at least five seasons now. On one hand, I think it's super great that he's that high up on that list because these are some all-time receivers we're talking about. On the other hand, Neil, you can only put so many wide receivers, I think, from an era into the Hall of Fame. I think there has to be a limit. And unfortunately or not, sometimes it's just you were in a great era. And, you know, it's great that you were one of the better receivers. But, you know, how many is too many, I guess, is the question. And for me, I actually look at that, Neil, and that matters to me. For you, though, does that matter to you? Do you care? Or if you're like, hey, if there is that many good receivers, you got to put them all in. Or do you also think there has to be some kind of line to draw in the sand of, you know, we can't put in 12 wide receivers from this one era of time?
Well, I don't know, because I think the argument for putting in more wide receivers from like specifically the 2000s onward is what we were talking about earlier, which is like the passing game really had, you know, it had that first explosion with the rule changes in the 70s, late 70s. And then, you know, you had some great passing offense like, you know, Dan Marino with the Dolphins and the Jim Kelly K-Gun and all that that we talked about. But really, you had that second boom that really persisted through the 2000s into the 2010s that was led by, again, I think The Greatest Show on Turf was sort of the first thing that kicked that off in 99. And so I think it's appropriate to adjust the number of players from a position from a particular era that you put in the Hall of Fame proportional to, A, there's more, there were more teams, right? There were more players, you know, sure. They did expansion, you know, in the 90s and with the Texans in what was it, 02, not that mm-hmm. much expansion. We're not talking the NHL here, but still more players. So, you know, if you're trying to kind of keep a consistent percentage of all players as Hall of Famers over time, you have to up that in kind of a raw number sense. And then I think it is appropriate for receivers to be more represented from an era in which passing was more important, especially when you consider the fact that going into like the 2010s and beyond, three receiver sets were so much more common than before that. So we're talking about not only are passes more common in this particular era, and it was a little bit like proliferated at the tail end of Torrey Holt's career. So I think it affects other players after him even more. But, you know, like slot receivers were really not as much of a thing, or they were fewer and further between, at least until you got to like the Wes Welkers and, you know, some of these guys that kind of specialized in that. And so now we're talking about you're competing with a whole other player who's in the starting lineup on offense, you know, for those catches, for those numbers and all of that when you're playing. And so I do think that that's another case for more receivers to be, you know, represented from the modern era than from previous eras, because you don't want to have the same number of receivers from that time when you were talking about the Paul Warfield. Like, I mean, he deserved it for sure, but for, you know, sure. You're talking about they didn't call that many passing plays, you know, like receivers, probably a much larger percentage of their role was blocking, which is kind of insane to think about, like compared with receivers now. Although, you know, with respect to Hines Ward, the trademarked greatest blocking receiver of all time. But so I do think that there needs to be a recognition that certain positions become more important. Now, do you take away spots from like running backs? Do you take away spots from interior offensive linemen versus, you know, guys that protected the quarterbacks, you know, blindside from edge rushers? That's a conversation too. I think it gets really complicated when you're talking about what is more important in different eras of the game. But we all know, like, a quarterback and a receiver, and to a certain extent, like a left tackle in the game now, is a lot more important than they were back in the 50s and 60s and 70s. I think that's a fair thing to say. And running backs are less important. I mean, God, every year we talk about how much downplayed the value of running back has become.
All right, Neil, quick quiz question for you. There's 22 today. There's 22 wide receivers in the Hall of Fame, okay? How many of those 22 do you think Torrey Holt played with? Like, played, like, they were in the league with? At this. No. In the same, they were in the, like, you know, wide receivers, how many of them were in the league at the same time as Torrey Holt? Even if it's just for a year, how many of those 22?
Ooh, I would guess, so 22 are in the Hall of Fame, like, just ever.
Ever. NFL history.
I think it's probably at least, I think it's probably around half, I would guess. Is that right?
Ten.
Yeah.
Wow. 10 of them play at the same time as Torrey Holt. Calvin Johnson, Randy Moss, Terrell Owens, Isaac Bruce, Marvin Harrison, Tim Brown, Jerry Rice, Chris Carter, Andre Reed, and Michael Irvin was finishing up his career in Torrey Holt's rookie season. So yes, 10 of the 22 wide receivers. I'm surprised you got that so dead on. I was, for some reason, I was surprised that almost half of the receivers in the Hall of Fame played in an 11-year period. But again, as you just mentioned, kind of the game changed. These players were becoming more and more prominent. And I bet if we looked at running backs and how many got in during, you know, a certain time period compared to the next 20 years, I'm sure that would kind of swing in the opposite direction as well. But good job by you.
Well, I think also the Hall of Fame, like, I'm not, you know, I wouldn't kind of single out guys that I think, like, shouldn't be in that are, sure, or whatever. But I do think that they had a lot of trouble, and maybe they're kind of getting better at, and this happens in every sport when there's big changes across eras. God help us when, like, you know, Steph Curry, well, maybe not him, but we know he's a Hall of Famer, but, like, you know, the 3-point shooters in the NBA, you know, suddenly are all on the ballot, and we have to kind of think through that, because I think there was a period of time where the voters didn't necessarily really know how to contextualize particular benchmarks,
yep,
that for a long time, for decades, they didn't really have to worry that much about, or they set them. It's like how, you know, how the passer rating formula works is some guy at, I don't know, IBM or something came up with it's relative to these benchmarks, and they were the league averages in, like, you know, 1968 or something. And we still use that formula now, even though the standards for every aspect of that equation have, like, completely blown away the numbers from the 60s. But, like, it was intended to be, you know, like, on a scale, like the grading scale at school, where, like, a 70 or something was average. And if you're in the 90s, you were doing great, and 100 was just, like, unheard of. And now guys put up 100 passer ratings, like, all the time. And, you know, we're talking about the 110s and the 120s sometimes. So I think that type of mindset also applied to receivers, because it's kind of the same thing, but it's sort of in reverse. It's the guys on the receiving end, literally, of the passes that were thrown by the guys with the passing number inflation. There's also grade inflation when it comes to receivers. And it takes a while, I think, to figure out exactly how to deal with those numbers and change mentally what you think the benchmark for, like, a great player should be in terms of career numbers. And we saw that, you know, like the steroid era in baseball, like, you know, you see it in just every sport. And that's why I think it's really important to contextualize things relative to the era in which they happen, which you do on your show. And, you know, many of the stats that we reference at the sports reference sites do as well. But I think it all too often, especially in the past, I think before, yep, there were these websites, the voters would, you know, they didn't have a lot of resources to be able to do that. And so they would either go off, you know, the eye test, but then mix in a little bit of, like, raw numbers. And there's a certain point where that type of thing really breaks down.
All right, Neil. So final verdict here, two questions and I'll answer, and then you'll be on your way. Question one, you know, if you had a vote, do you believe Torrey Holt belongs in the Hall of Fame? And then my second question is, do you think Torrey Holt will make it to the Hall of Fame?
I think he does deserve to be in just on the basis of the fact that when we went through that exercise, he was better than not just a small number, but, you know, a handful of guys that already were in the Hall of Fame. So I think he does deserve to be in. And as to whether he will or not, I know this one's going to get decided after him, so I can't really use it, but I do think it comes back to Julio Jones. I think it's kind of an interesting comparison where, like, if Julio Jones gets in, and I think my gut says he does, I think Torrey Holt also gets in, because I do think that they just have such similar resumes and you know, similar kind of paths as players. But I could be off. You know, I think of Julio Jones really highly, but maybe other people are not as high on the Julio Express.
Well, Julio Jones will definitely be a future episode when he one day retires. For the Torrey Holt episode, though, I'm surprised by my answer here, because I think for a long time before I started to do the prep for this, I was a yes, but I'm actually a no. And the reason being, I look at these 10 wide receivers that have got in since Torrey Holt entered the league, and I'm comparing Holt against all of them. And in touchdowns, he's almost dead last. In receiving yards, he's in the back half of that group. In receptions, he's in the back half of that group. And then I look at his accolades. That one All-Pro first team really stands out to me. He was only elected by that, you know, the voters once as one of the top two receivers in the league. And I feel like if you're lacking in some of, you know, those main categories, like, you know, Calvin Johnson, right? Didn't play that long, so his numbers are lower in receptions and yards, but he was a three-time All-Pro first team. And he had some of the best seasons we've ever seen at his peak, and that got me over for him. And then, you know, people like Randy Moss, even, not 182 catches, but again, 156 touchdowns. We don't need to talk about Randy Moss, but when I compared him against those already in, I see him near the bottom of that group, which is fine. They're Hall of Famers. But then I brought up earlier Andre Johnson, Reggie Wayne, and Torrey Holt. All these guys are trying to get in, as are Steve Smith Jr. and Hines Ward. All five of those guys can't get in. And I know you had Wayne, Holt, Johnson. I think I have Wayne ahead of Holt. I think I have Johnson ahead of Holt. And I think I might have Steve Smith ahead of Holt. And I went back to that earlier comment, Neil. I can't get behind putting all of them in. Even if I think there should be more, and I totally do, I can't imagine us having 10 from his era and then these all five of them going in too. So I'm actually a no, even though I think he was a hell of a receiver. Do I think he'll get in though, Neil? I do think he's going to get in.
Because of people like me and my lax standards.
Most people, though, that become a finalist, for the most part, I don't have the exact percentage in front of me, but if you are a finalist at some point, you usually get in one way or another. So, and again, Neil, him getting in, I have absolutely no problem. I would never, like, fight that. I would never point to that as someone who's a weak Hall of Fame candidate. I just, honestly, there's a lot of people trying to get in the Hall of Fame across a number of positions. And even though I think wide receiver is one of the more important positions today, I think some are severely neglected. And I just, I think there's enough receivers from that era that are going to be in to represent that era of football. But again, yeah. I would never be mad about it. So I'm a no for me, a yes for I think he'll get in. But again, if he gets in, which I think he will, by no means would I say a word about that's a bad call or the Hall's lowering its standards. That's not something I would say.
Yeah, I think your point about the All Pros does come back to this idea of, like, you know, if you happen to play in the same era as Randy Moss and Marvin Harrison and T.O., you're not going to really be named to that many first team All Pro selections. But that, by the same token, it's like, okay, so you weren't as good as Hall of Famers. So then does that mean you should be a Hall of Famer or not? It's kind of the eternal question of, like, how much do we adjust for your competition or give you, you know, a break because you played against great competition? Because frankly, there's great competition in every era.
Exactly. All right, Neil. Well, first football one in the books.
Ooh, we've
completed the big four. So now one day we have to do F1 or some of these others you brought to me in the past.
Neil, I'd be down for another hockey, honestly.
Neil, before we get you out of here, anything you want to plug real quick?
Yeah, so people can find my work at The Messenger. We specifically have an NBA forecast model that people should check out. It updates every day and gives you the odds of each team winning the, you know, NBA finals and also making the playoffs. And people can also find, I keep a lot of models like that running at my Substack, which is neilpayne.substack.com. So check that out.
Everyone, go check out Neil. He does great work. Neil, great way to start off my year. Great to talk to you. I'm sure I'll talk to you later this year.
Thanks as always, Jim.
All right. I want to thank Neil again for coming on the podcast to talk about Torrey Holt today. That is all we have for you on the podcast. If you don't already, please subscribe, follow us on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, wherever you listen to your podcasts. Follow us on Twitter at Pod of Fame. If you've done both those things, you have done your homework. I hope you have a great week, and I will talk to you next Monday. Take care.